Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of The Ring with Umenasa. This is a show where I encourage you and I remind you that you are a fighter in the ring of life, and I know that you will win. Once again, thank you so much for tuning in to The Ring. Umenasa here. Today is August the 2nd, 2022, and I hope that all is well with you. I happen to have an amazing guest today, and her name is Angel Kate. And she's just a very, very powerful woman of God. She's also the director for GSFE, one of the branches of GSFE. She owns her own business, and as I am interviewing her, I will put on her bio as I look for it, which is very unprofessional because I should have had this done before. But I will look for it. However, there are so many parts to this woman, and she's going to be one of the speakers at the Nothing Happens in the Grave Tour, which will be in California, August the 25th. And she's going to be sharing so many aspects of her life. But today on radio, for a few minutes, maybe 15, maybe 30, maybe 25, like however God allows her, I would like for her to share her strained relationship with her mother, because a lot of people, no matter how successful you are, if you have a strained relationship with a very important aspect of your life, either with your wife or your husband or your brother or your mother or the person who is supposed to be your caregiver, which in her case, her mother was supposed to be her caregiver, it has a way of putting a damp on every bit of success that you have. So I would like for her to share how that relationship was strained, how she came out of it, if it was ever reconciled, how she dealt with it. And I know that that will encourage you as well. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, put your hands together for Miss Angel Cade. Hi, Miss Angel.
Hi. Hi. I'm so excited to be here with you and be able to have this conversation. I know that it definitely is one that is, you know, needed, and sometimes we can be ashamed, but I am, you know, thankful to be able to be open and transparent in a way that in my heart hopefully helps others not only see themselves but be able to heal. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you so much for making time to be with us on here. So go ahead. The floor is yours. I'm not going to be asking questions or anything. Like, just go ahead and just share. If there is need to interject, I will. But I leave the floor to you now.
Okay. Thank you so much, Umenasa. I appreciate the platform and the space that you've created for others. I think a lot of times when we look at our parents, and for me, especially my mother, you know, you have an idea of kind of what you see other people have in terms of mother-daughter, you know, relationship and endearment or care or love. And as you get older, you just kind of realize that I realized when I got older that my mom at one time was a little girl and that she was hurt or that she experienced different things that caused her to be and treat me the way that she did. And in her mind, she always did her very best. In her heart, she always loved in a way that she thought was going to produce something. I believe that she's going to be a strength in me. But along the way, you know, it hurt. And so when you're growing up and you're looking for a type of, you know, motherly care and love, and it's not there, you're constantly looking for it from other places in different ways. And for me, that was the case. So in my relationship with my mother, what happened was I was looking for that type of love and care outside of my family unit. And it caused me to run away from home and look for it in other places. I lived with a friend. I'm in California. I'm originally from St. Kitts. I lived in Canada. And when I moved here to the States, my story is that when I moved here, it was very hard for me to fit in. I didn't quite fit in with the African-American kids because I was different and my name was Angel and I had an accent and I, you know, it was just all very different. And so they rejected me in certain ways. And then, you know, all of my other counterparts, you know, the white counterparts, they just saw me and just kind of, you know, thought I was, you know, black and that was it, and just kind of, you know, outcast me as well. So I never quite fit into any particular group or space. And because of that, I found myself yearning to be loved, yearning to fit in, yearning to be enough. And so what happened was I did have a few friends, and I befriended somebody who lived in Watts, which at the time in the 80s was a particularly kind of rough area in Los Angeles. And so I ran away and I stayed with her, and she lived off of the street called Firestone and Hickory. And I remember being there, and I remember meeting a guy, and he was in a gang, and then I ended up, you know, befriending him and hanging out with him. And it just introduced me to this lifestyle that was so loyal and had love and had this level of commitment that I thought that was what I was looking for. And it filled a void, so filled with, you know, danger and risk and a number of other things. And when I finally, you know, would go, you know, I would go back and forth, and I would go back home. I remember going out to a party one night, and I was driving home. I was in the passenger seat, and a rival gang pulled up next to us, looked in the car, and they slowed down, and they shot through the back window and through the front seat that I was sitting in, and the bullet lodged in my chest. And at the time, I didn't even know that I had been shot. And I remember hearing the pop, and it was so loud, and it felt like a tire popped right in my ear, and I didn't know where it was coming from. And I leaned back, and when I leaned back, all of a sudden the entire seat was wet. And when I reached around to see what was going on and pulled my hand back, my hand was filled with blood and burnt tissue, and the entire car screamed in realization that I had been shot. And they wanted to rush me to the hospital right away. And I was so adamant that I said, no, take me home. My mom is going to kill me. And all I could think about was my mom being upset that I was out here in these streets getting shot. And I wasn't thinking about my health. I wasn't thinking about I needed to take care of this. I was in complete shock. And I forced them to take me home. And I went home, and I got in the house, and I changed my clothes, and I wrapped up some paper towel, and I was going to go to sleep that night. And one of my friends that was in the car came back to my house, knocked on my bedroom window, and literally said, if you don't come out, I'm going to wake up your parents, because thought I was home. They went to bed. I just, you know, went along as usual. And she was so serious and so adamant. I went out of the house. I was a little weak because I had been losing a lot of blood. I went to the hospital and was able to, you know, maneuver from there. I was in the hospital for 3 days. They ended up calling my parents. And when they called the house, my dad answered, and he said, no, you've got the wrong girl. Like, my daughter's home. We heard her come home, and she's in her room. And they were like, nope, your daughter's here. She's been shot. And he was like, you have the wrong house. And he said, he put him on hold. He turned on the light, and he said, you could see the trail of blood in the house for every place that I went. I didn't realize how much I was bleeding. And if she didn't come back and get me, I would have literally bled to death that night. When I was in the hospital, my mother was so embarrassed that this had happened to me. She did not come to see me in the hospital. She was angry and she was upset, and she, you know, didn't want to see me that way. And again, another part of why it was just really tough to, you know, engage with her. And as I, you know, had this lifestyle, I have a little sister, and she assured me she was going to raise my sister completely opposite, because I was so bad, and I was so, you know, I had caused so much trouble. But, you know, I really do thank God for people along the way who are able to see beyond what are now and see the potential of what you can become. They can see beyond the actions or the things that you are choosing now, and they could look at you and they can listen to you and hear the essence of who you really are and who you are striving or wanting or really yearning to be. And so when I got shot, it really created a moment in my life where I had an opportunity to make some changes. You know, it was a way it stopped me from the trajectory that I was on. I statistically should have never graduated from high school. I had all F's and one D. And my D was in PE because I showed up every now and again and they, you know, passed you when you got dressed. But that was the type of person that I was. I ditched school. I didn't show up. I didn't do the work. But I had an opportunity to change schools, change environments, change friends. And when that opportunity made itself available, I chose to make that change because I realized that what I was doing wasn't working. I realized what I was doing wasn't producing the results or the life that I, you know, yearned for. And honestly, at that moment, couldn't even imagine could be mine, but I just knew what I was experiencing wasn't what was meant for me. And when I changed schools and I had a person who met me and she was a counselor and she looked at me and looked at my transcripts and thought, who is this person? This doesn't match. And that's really the first time somebody looked at me and said, you know what, this isn't congruent. This doesn't match. This isn't the truth of who you are. And she began to send me to classrooms. And literally every teacher that I went to rejected me in the classroom because either they didn't have enough seats or they didn't have enough books to accept me into the classroom. And I would go back to her and say, well, they didn't accept me. She was also the counselor for a magnet program that was a law and government magnet program, the first of its kind in the state. And they had a to-the-scale courtroom, and one of the classes was, political science, and they would do mock trials. And anyway, there was a waiting list, and the waiting list was hundreds long. And she said, I don't know where else to put you. I'm going to put you in this magnet class. But she says, do not embarrass me. Go in this class and do the work. And literally at the end of the day, I was enrolled in four classes, which technically put me in that program. So I bypassed a waiting list of over 300 students who were trying to get in this program just because those teachers rejected me. And my point is that sometimes when you are rejected, it is because you need to be positioned into the place where you are supposed to be. A lot of times we get rejected and we get frustrated and we loop around the rejection, when sometimes that is the only way that you're going to face the direction, get into the space, or in my case, get into the class that was going to make a difference for the rest of my life. When I got into those committed not to embarrass her, my grades went from all F's and one D to all A's and one B, and my B was in PE because I hated the mile. But fast forward, I graduated valedictorian of my class. I went on to go to UCLA where I graduated. And my point being is that, again, you're talking about trajectories. You're talking about making major changes, incremental changes, navigating rejections. These are all things that all work together to then position you to have a posture for what's going to be the rest of your life. You have the ability to be sit in a seat of authorship. You have the ability to navigate and write a story that you are living into in a particular way. And I want you to be encouraged about that power and that ability that you have to do so. You are not left to just continue and loop and read the last chapters of your life, but you were designed to author and write the next series that we haven't even read yet of what is going to be from the things that you have thought of and the things that you have designed and the things that you are planning and the things that you want to be able to engage in. There's no restriction or limitation on what those things are. You just have to be open to walk in it and receive it as it comes. And so I just want you to be encouraged. And so as far as my relationship with my mother, you know, I was able to, along the way, have other relationships with other mentors and women in my life. We, Amanessa talked about GSFE, which I'm very proud to be the vice chair of the organization and the director of the San Fernando Valley chapter. But more importantly, I'm very, very proud that the founder, Robbie Motter, she is one of my mentors. I have a number of them that stand up in my life that that give me the love and the guidance and the care and the education that so many times as human beings we need in our encouragement. And so Robbie has been a person who stood up and said, you know what, if you want to do this, I believe in you. You want to go here, I'm going to recommend you. You want to do this, I've got you. She surprised me time and time again with recommendations, edifications, and just support along the way. And so people like her have been a blessing to me. Her, Jacqueline Goldberg, Pink Lady, Denise Jackson, just different ones along the way. But my mother, my relationship with my mother, I've had counseling, endless counseling, hours of counseling, revisiting, you know, different instances, different incidents, things that have been in my mind and my voice, things that she's told me that were negative when I was younger, that were no longer her voice, but now were my own because it was so embedded. But I'm so thankful for healing. I remember doing some work, and I was going to a retreat, and one of my coaches had told me to do this exercise, and he told me to write a letter, and he told me to write a letter asking for forgiveness from my mother. And I thought to myself, why would I ask for forgiveness? He said, because you didn't understand her position. He said, think about the things that you could apologize for, that you are responsible for in the relationship. She's an adult. You're an adult. She was a child once. You were a child once. What could you write to her and ask her forgiveness for? Which is very different from any exercise I had done in the past. Tell you, when I did this exercise, it started pouring from me and I started crying. And I remember sitting at the table in my hotel room and I was writing this letter and I was writing it on the little hotel note sheets. I didn't even have a pad. I just was writing and writing, and it was like 4 or 5 pages of just, you know, I'm sorry that I, you know, I lied and that I caused, you know, that I did cause problems, that I didn't listen, and that, you know, I'm sorry that I didn't, you know, look at the little girl that you were. And so anyway, I wrote this letter, and it was so healing. But when I came home, I went to visit my mom, and I told her I wrote this. And she said, do you want to read it to me? And I said, yes. And I read it to her, and it was like in that moment, I could see her finally as a human being who has her own hurt, her own ambitions, her own desires, her own mishaps, her own issues, her own, you know, issues with her own mother. And I saw that in her, and it was just such a beautiful moment. And when I was finished reading it, she said, thank you. And she said, do you want me to keep this? And I said, yes, it's for you. I wrote it. And from that day on, there had been a true healing, not just tolerance, but a true healing in our relationship. And so I have come to, you know, enjoy her and experience her in a different way as an adult. I have one son, and my son adores her, and she's endearing and kind and loving to him. And so I just appreciate that I've been able to live long enough to experience the whole relationship in a way that is forgiving, and that is healing. And so it's just been beautiful, and it's impacted how I mother my son, and I'm just grateful for that because I think about things that I want him to be able to experience in me and be open to share and talk with me along the way in his own journey. And so it's just been beautiful. So anyway, those are the things I wanted to share. I hope that it is encouraging in some way. Amanessa, I don't know if there's anything else that you'd like for me to share with the audience, but I am thankful and grateful for you and for this opportunity to be able to just pour myself out in this moment and in this season. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Two things that you said that blessed me. The first one is that rejection positions you, if you allow it to, rather than going around the rejection and thinking that you're so smart, because like, because as you go around, like it's going to find you somewhere else. And at that time, it will mm-hmm. find you at a very inconveniencing place. And at a very inconveniencing time. And then I also like what you said about writing to your mother, because like you're older now, so you're at a different perspective of life, and bitterness and anger could make you an arrogance. Like bitterness will bring about the arrogance to where, okay, so why do I need to apologize? if we have perspective, you know, we will obey like you just did. And actually see the wider spectrum being a woman now that you're a woman, being a mother now that you're a mother, being a wife now that you're a wife, you know. So your apologizing to her was not condoning what she did, but it was not having compassion over her. I guess that's what that was, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. It was that, and then also, you know, taking my responsibility for, you know, how am I'm 46 now, and I still, you know, to loop around having, blaming a woman, you know, years ago for what she did, it's this idea that I'm taking it with me, I'm using it as a crutch, I'm using it as an excuse, I'm circling around these issues saying, well, my mommy issues are causing me to, you know, do this or causing me to do that. And at what point do I say, you know what, it's enough. I am responsible for my own life. I take responsibility for my own life. I forgive myself and others for all the wrongs done to me. And I am taking responsibility for my own life. So at what point do I allow someone else to rob me of my present happiness, of my future, of my own experience with my son? My son is not, it's not a little thing. My son's a hero. He's a miracle. I have 7 pregnancies. He's the product of my 7th pregnancy, and he's a surviving twin. I have lost children. I have held them in my arms while they are dying. So he's such a miracle to me, and the relationship between a mother and child is a very precious one I never thought I would have, ever. And I had kind of resigned to it because of that relationship, that maybe it wasn't meant for me. Maybe I didn't know how. Maybe because I didn't see it or experience, I wouldn't know. But God said something different. And so because of it, I'm in a place where I'm able to love. I thought I'd be the world's best aunt and godmother, which is nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But for me, you know, I almost had given up. And when I was pregnant with twin boys, I thought that was my recompense. I thought this was my reward. This is what it's about. And when I went to the hospital, and I was in the hospital for almost the entire pregnancy, and I was holding on, and I gave birth at 23 weeks and 3 days. They should not have survived. They were at risk for everything. I thought, here I was faced with another loss. And when my younger son died in the hospital after 2.5 weeks of going sepsis, I thought, I don't, you know, why would God allow me to go through this? I was, you know, in a NICU with people who were having twins and triplets, or, you know, different things that were going on. And I just thought to myself, is this a payment for something that I've done? And I, you know, you question you know, you question these things as you're going through. You talked about it earlier. These, you know, we talk the pain and those hurts and those things. You come to it and you think, is this something that I owe? When we know we can't pay for any of it, but we want to reason with ourselves that there is a cost in this hurt, that there's something else that's going on. But nonetheless, my son was in the hospital for 6 months. He had over 9 surgeries. We brought him home in November of 2010, and he has never been back in the hospital since. They said he wouldn't walk. They said he wouldn't talk. But everything that we endure, every therapist, every early intervention, every study, every assessment, every diagnosis, autism, speech delay, visual impairment, we don't believe what the doctor says. We say, you know what? We believe what God says, and he's not done. He's not done yet. And so we celebrate every win. And when I tell you my little guy is such an amazing little hero, a wonderful little guy, 12 years old, going into the 6th grade, he's healed our family in a way, in teaching us how to love, in teaching us, you know, a different level of patience. It's just been beautiful. But I thank God for the lesson, and we keep going, because it's from strength to strength that we endure.
My God. The part where you said, is this a payment? Like, is this how, like, the universe, life is paying you back?
Mm-hmm.
That resonated so much. But God is a God of restoration. And
yes.
God is a God of restoration. And he wouldn't do you like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But boy, it feels like it when you're in it. You're just like, what?
Yes. You're right. Wow. Thank you so much. Thank you so, so much. I have put your bio and everything on there. I'm trying to see how many minutes we have left. Yeah, we have just 2 more minutes. But if you go to Angel. Ms. Angel, how can people stay in touch with you? We have 2 more minutes.
Yes, people can. I do have angelcade.com, angelecade.com, and they can feel free to learn more about me, my story, my son, the organizations that I'm involved with. Everything about me is there. If someone is interested in me as a business consultant, that is my core business. I've been doing it for 20 years, helping people start business the right way the first time, starting LLCs, corporations, nonprofits, any type of entity. They can visit me at execonthego.com. And I have an amazing team that I work with. I've been working with my husband for the last 20 years, and it's the work that we do in helping people start and fulfill their business vision, purpose, and dreams. And that is execonthego.com, execonthego.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I have put everything here in the show notes, so people can definitely refer to this. She said that she empowers entrepreneurs just like you with the tools they need to identify their purpose, clarify their vision, and create a roadmap to make their dreams real. After nearly 20 years of working with over 15,000 entrepreneurs and setting up their business in infrastructure, protection, and legitimacy, I have time and time again found one undeniable truth. The journey ahead is always informed by the life we have lived. Awesome. Thank you so much, Ms. Angel. I'm looking forward to seeing you August the 25th, but I'm also looking forward to being your speaker, which is the
third Tuesday, August 16th, 6:30 p.m. Pacific Standard
August
Time.
August 16th, 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time, that's going to be on Zoom. Once again, thank you so much for being here, and y'all just look forward to the Nothing Happens in the Grave tour. We are coming to a city near you. God bless you. Bye-bye.